This podcast is brought to you by eRadio. For more podcasts, check out our website on eradiosa.com or download the eRadio SA app from the Google Play Store. Enjoy.
And it is time again for Tech Plus. Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, doesn't matter where you are. You are welcome, and my name is Ion. It hasn't changed since last week. and that guy opposite me is still Kane, right?
I hope so. Okay. Last time I checked, it was Kane.
Okay,
lekker. But it's good to be here. Thanks for having me, Ion.
Yes, thanks for popping in. How was your week?
Busy. I mean, the weather in South Africa now, I can't complain. You know, I was thinking about it the other day. I was like, you know, 6 months ago, coming 5:30, your day's kind of winding down. And now 7:30, you can still catch a bit of sunlight, you know?
Yeah, it's nice. It's a summer thing. But right now, it's a bit demarcastal. It's kind of deciding what it wants to do.
Yeah.
Look outside right now.
15 seasons in a day.
Yeah, look outside right now. It's not looking very, very pleasant.
Apparently there's a storm coming to the coastal side of South Africa. I'm not too sure on the specifics of that. But I normally don't complain. You know, sometimes you need an excuse to stay inside or just go jog in the rain. I mean, new experiences every day.
Exactly, yeah. If you're listening to us live now on a Thursday afternoon at 3:05, there is a weather warning for a severe thunderstorm that's going to lash and whip us later this afternoon into this evening. Looks like the majority of the Western Cape could be some flooding as well.
I'll see you users are going to cry.
Yeah, well, all the internet, it's quite a, sensitive to the weather, actually. Have you noticed?
Any mobile network, you know, any cables obviously fine from the weather, like fiber.
Yeah.
But any
no cables, you got problems. Yeah,
if you're connecting via LTE or 3G or 4G, which would be your phone, or you know, you kind of get the stable HSDPA connection, which means you can download a song in about 3 to 5 weeks.
3 to 5 weeks, yeah, I just like it. That's if it doesn't fail, if it actually goes through.
No, that's the worst, you know. You've got such a slow internet connection, it's just bridging the end of it, and then it says failed. And you, oh, no, here we go again.
That's the worst. That's the worst thing to happen. Kane, we've got so much to talk about today. What is the first thing that you'd like to start with?
Facebook is changing their name.
Oh, that's the big story. That's probably the story of the week.
It is. It is, because it happens so infrequently with big corporations. You know, normally a name kind of is your whole skeleton of awareness. You know, everybody kind of recognizes the name. I mean, can you imagine if takealot.com turned into buy and go? You know, you're not gonna,
or takeitall.com.
Take it all. Just cheap.
Yeah.
So they're changing their name, and it's actually for a greater purpose than just, hey, Facebook wants to be called Bookface or something like that. You know what I mean? It's something deeper than just a name change, and it's because they want to focus building on a metaverse. Now, that's a term that is becoming more and more popular of late. You know, it's turning heads and turning around a lot of interest and things like that. And really, Facebook is planning to change the name of the company next week, which The Verge reported on Tuesday evening. The name will aim to recast Facebook's focus on building the metaverse rather than as a social media company by rebranding its main app as one of many under a parent company, according to The Verge. CEO Mark Zuckerberg will discuss the name change at Facebook's annual Connect conference on October 28, but the company could announce the name before then. Facebook did not respond to any requests or queries about what is happening, so we're kind of all a little bit in the dark as to what the exact name is going to be, the date that the name is going to be proposed. All we really know is that October 28th, you can look at it as like the latest that you should know what
that's
this
a week's time
is.
That's next week, Thursday, so we'll probably be live on air when they unveil a new name. That's gonna
it
be
would
cool.
Be really good, eh, if we could time it right.
What do you think's the name?
Well, the thing is, we first have to understand what the metaverse actually is. You know, the metaverse is this next generation of internet. Supposedly a new name is a closed guarded secret with not even senior managers let in on it. Because obviously we've seen it a lot, you know, Amazon, you have these proper leaks. Anybody who knows this information knows they're going to get famous if they're the first to kind of leak this information. But the metaverse is basically like the next generation of internet. Picture virtual reality meets cryptocurrency, meets online conferencing, meets digital interconnectedness, where, you know, proposably you could walk to your computer, sit down, pop in your VR headset, and go to a virtual workplace where you can communicate and talk to your colleagues, your clients, you know.
Oh dear.
And it's hard for me to conceptualize, to be quite honest, because physical, a lot of people I think are very familiar with physical. You know, you go to physical conference, a physical meeting, a physical interview, and other people might be used to a digital interview, a digital conference whereby you're on Zoom, you know, and your face is the camera. But I don't think a lot of people have the ability to truly conceptualize a meeting whereby you're meeting people virtually, which means you're not seeing a head and shoulders of a person with like a pasted on face that they have. It's going to be a virtual avatar. You know, it's going to be some sort of digital representation of yourself. So you could be...
It's going to look like you.
You could be a male or you could be a female. You know, you know, I don't even know if males will be able to show themselves as females. You know, you could go either way. So it's pretty crazy. But I saw a tweet the other day. Oh my word, Ian, it was so funny. It was like, because it's all, obviously the metaverse is all around crypto. It's all around, you know, the future of VR and things like that. And one of my colleagues at work shared something, and I'm looking for it now on my phone. It was a tweet that someone made. Let me see if I can find it here quickly. It was literally like, if a beautiful Asian girl reaches out to you on Twitter and tells you to buy one of her new cryptocurrencies, don't trust him.
Yeah, don't trust him. Good one. Yeah, look, anything is possible. That's an interesting thought. I think the pandemic is kind of accelerating that kind of stuff at the moment because everything is going virtual. So I think that was probably meant to be in the future, like in 2050. But now it's coming closer because of the times we live in.
Exactly. And you would never expect, you know, if 5 years ago you said to someone, well, you're going to go into a virtual conference room with 10 people in a VR headset like they're playing a video game. You can be like, what?
I would say, what alien movie is that?
Yeah, like what movie did you get that from? Yeah. How's that even going to be possible? But this is what Facebook says their trajectory is for the decision to make a name change.
Oh dear. Now,
and in my opinion, I mean, name changes only do so much. I think it's a broader goal of kind of separating themselves as a social media company. Facebook has always been known as a social media company. You know, Zuckerberg has always been known as the creator of a social media network, not a digital metaverse, which is what they're framing it as, where you can interact with things and people and assets in a digital environment and make digital payments using something like crypto and things like that.
And now Mark Zuckerberg's got competition.
Oh.
An orange man started...
This is big.
Started a social network. Remember, we discussed it weeks, months ago already. Do you remember?
Yeah, we said it could happen.
I think it was your story.
Yes.
And you said...
Donald Trump is planning to launch a company, a social media company called Truth, to challenge Twitter and Facebook. Because we all know what happened to poor old Donald on Twitter and Facebook.
Yeah, he got kicked.
He was voted off of the island, you know. So Donald Trump has announced a SPAC attack. The former president is planning a new media and technology empire that will be publicly traded after a merger with a firm, which is a pretty big firm called Digital World Acquisition Corp, according to a Wednesday press release from the Trump Media and Technology Group. The move comes after Trump was kicked off social media such as Twitter and Facebook, and includes a new social platform called Truth Social. But it isn't like, because you would think, oh, look, Donald Trump's going out, he's going to create a new social media network because he's feeling a little bit heart sore that, you know, he was kicked off of Twitter and Facebook after starting, you know, a big riot of some kind, you know, the White House, and, you know, instigating people like that. But it's not just a social network. It plans to be something much bigger. So this is what they're actually planning to do. They're planning to obviously take on Twitter and Facebook with the Truth Social Network, but also has ambitions that expand far beyond social media, with references to some of the most successful media companies around, including Netflix and Walt Disney. It also nods to an upcoming tech stack that could include payment services similar to Stripe Inc. and cloud features that compete with Amazon.com and Alphabet Inc.'s Google. TMTG categorizes its global as creating a non-cancelable community that would extend beyond the reach of current tech behemoths. The deck also touts that a third of respondents in a survey from The Hill said they'd use a Trump-backed social media platform, and 54% say they would not use the platform. Here's my opinion on it. If I had heard that a social media network was coming out that is highly focused on truth, anti-cancellation, anti-propaganda, anti-hate crime, anti all of these things that we see that is often, you know, controlled by filters and things like that. I mean, obviously, if you go to somewhere like 4chan, which is extremely open public space, you get a lot of really bad stuff. You know, you don't just get good stuff all the time. It's not just happy-go-lucky all the time. But a network that is prioritizing freedom of speech and things, I would say it's great. But now I'm torn between two, because on the one side of it, it's a social media network which kind of challenges Facebook's monopoly and Twitter's monopoly, which we need. And on the other side, it's being piloted by Donald Trump, which is someone I don't know whether or not to trust. Truth Social, follow the truth.
I just went on to truthsocial.com. It's not even ranked on Google yet, and just all the articles about it. And I see people already inquiring about the stocks and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, investing, it's going into public.
Yes, but it is online, truthsocial.com. You can now actually log in and join the waiting list. Look there.
Ooh.
And they've got you can pre-order on the App Store on Apple. Hey, where's the Google Play Store? Look, it's only Apple. That's discrimination weird. Right there.
And normally Apple's harder to get on than Google Play.
Trump probably knows somebody there. But look there, Truth, T-R-U, Trump, Truth. See what they did there?
Yeah. But the thing is, it's also, they're calling it the Truth Social Network, piloted by a prior politician.
Yeah.
Take that how you want to take that.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I get what you're saying.
Are politicians the most truthful? I mean, you know, you don't really know. So I'm really interested to see. Look, don't get me wrong, I'll probably buy their stock. Absolutely. If I have an opportunity to, I'll probably will. It's a very good investment idea. You know, you might lose money, you might make money, but never invest money you're not willing to lose. That's a good move from a financial point of view. It's a clever move for anyone to, you know, at their own discretion, you know, do your own research to take a look at that potential financial opportunity from just an investment point of view. It's big, it's got reach, it's got big players behind the wheel, you know, they're challenging multi-billion dollar industries. It would be a no-brainer. Would you rather invest in a social media platform run by really, really big guys in the space? Or would you rather go take a chance with a social media platform developed by a small tech firm in Silicon Valley? It's the question you have to ask yourself from an investment point of view. From a utility point of view, I want to know what the difference is, what the unique benefits are for users of the social media network. We know how Facebook creates revenue, and we know that people who use Facebook do not acquire any of that revenue.
Yeah.
Will this be a social media network which will provide an income stream for creators and content sharers? Or will it just be another massive macro social media platform with all the bells and whistles of things we've seen before? That's the ultimate question.
Yeah, very good. What you're saying there is so true. I mean, I'm also wondering, look at Facebook. To me, Facebook has become this oversaturated thing. It's just clogged. It's overloaded with information stuff. And I mean, obviously, it depends on who you're following, but it's just too much. It's reached the point now where it's actually, I almost want to say it kind of needs rebranding, rethinking a bit.
Absolutely.
So maybe Zuckerberg's timing is not bad.
Well, Zuckerberg's timing on rebranding could be for many reasons, one of which they're piloting the idea as a way to create this metaverse idea or pivot themselves as a potential metaverse. And then on the other side of the coin, Facebook is also under a lot of discrimination, privacy scandals, leaked documentation.
Just after all that happened now, the timing is very interesting.
Mark Zuckerberg has a very important next few months ahead of him in terms of how he rolls this out and how Facebook as a company rolls this out. Because right now, from a competition point of view, if you look at the last 10 years, here is Facebook's greatest kink in their armor. If you're going to launch a industry disrupting alternative, you don't go and launch it when a social media platform like Facebook is inherently strong and has the confidence of all the members. You launch it when there is a consensus of uncertainty and doubt and fear. And that's very good timing from Trump. He's a businessman. You can expect that.
Yeah.
But it's going to be tight.
Yo, what a time to be alive. The video streaming service Netflix increased the prices of two of its plans in South Africa this past week. So Netflix and chill is going to be very expensive now. Ken, you need to cancel you've got two Netflixes running. You need to cancel one.
I sent Netflix a message and I was like, guys, there's something wrong here. You know, I'm getting double charged. But now I'm exceptionally worried because I haven't heard back from them. But I still have two accounts and they're just increasing. So I think they're like, no, let's not cancel any subscriptions just yet. Let's just get this full money out.
But what I like about it is they're still kind of thinking of the entry-level mobile and budget-orientated basic plan. They're keeping those prices the same. That's quite nice of them.
Well, here's a very cool trick for anybody that wants. Because Netflix doesn't limit available viewable shows based on the amount that you pay. They limit the playback quality.
Yeah, that's nice, hey?
Yes.
Imagine, you just made me realize something there. Imagine if you had one of these budget plans, like the 49 Rand plan or the 99 Rand plan, you could only watch a certain percentage of the shows. Imagine. That would be awful.
Or not be able to watch certain shows, which would be a problem. But Netflix actually builds their vertical, their model, their payment model, based on the playback quality, which means if you're someone like me, you're very much inclined to say, hey, I'm just going to buy the best deal. I'm just going to pay the 200 a month. But then you go home and you watch on your 1080p TV, which isn't 2K or 4K or 8K or 100K, you know, it's just a normal traditional TV screen. There's no reason to pay 200 Rand a month to play your content back at 1/4 of the highest quality that Netflix offers.
But people don't know that. No. They don't realize it. Also, I mean, if you have one of these higher priced accounts, then you can get two people or more logging in at the same time.
That's
with a basic plan, you can only get one person logging in.
Right.
But I mean, it's based on what you need. If you're a single person, a basic plan is more than enough.
Exactly. And especially if you're someone who watches on a smaller device like your phone, I mean, it's a perfect, you know, 60 Rand a month you get Netflix on your phone. You know, you're not watching on the TV. You even have Screencast where you can cast your phone's audio and video onto your TV. Now you've got Netflix, all the shows you want in the world at 1080p for 50 Rand a month. I mean, you can't beat that.
So, did you see the increase, the prices, what it's going up by?
I did. My wallet fell out my pocket when I read it.
Yes, the standard plan is going up by a whopping 20 Rand per month. That's 139 Rand. It's now 159. And then the premium one used to be 169. Now it's 199. So, you pay 30 Rand more.
So, it's about anywhere from let's say 200 to 350 Rand more expensive every month.
It's the first time that they increased the price on their plans in South Africa since they launched here in January 2016.
They say it's because their catalogue of content has gotten a lot better. But my argument is, where is my 2019 content? Where's my 2020 content? That you fell behind on. I should be getting less, you know?
Yeah, but hey, you
have you watched you?
Yes, I finished it last night.
We just started watching it, actually.
Okay. Oh wow, you're in for a ride, man.
Did you do one of those, wow, this is good, let me just watch the whole thing and
whatnot? Yes. I did it with a family member and we were watching it at the same time. Like literally to the minute we started it at the same time watching it. And we were commenting on WhatsApp and all that stuff about Yeah, you're in for quite a ride. It's I would say that the season finale was actually quite good. It's quite a big twist.
Really, eh?
Yeah.
See, the dangerous thing about Netflix is, from a time perspective, the amount of time you spend on Netflix, is sometimes they release new series which start in season one, and that's great. You can spend, you know, 10 times 40 minutes, you know, 400 odd minutes watching series, and then you're done with the season. But sometimes, like with The Good Doctor, they come out with like 3 seasons in one go, and then you're hooked behind your TV for a week. You know, you can barely pull your eyes off of the screen because they end every episode on a massive cliffhanger, you know?
Yes.
You got to know more.
Yes, and then Dynasty is also releasing on Friday, and everybody's still watching Squid Game.
I'm watching Another Life, actually. There's season 2 of Another Life.
Okay, what's it like?
It's very good, actually. It's a little bit slow-paced. I like space movies, but it is... Sometimes you just get this impression, because it's a funny thing for me, you know, especially with a show like Another Life. These guys just go through, you know, like some space adventure. They go through a wormhole. They've been flipping shot at. Their ship is wrecked, and then there's 2 people talking on the screen, and they've exceptionally well made up. You know, their makeup is on point. Their clothing is clean, and you're like, you haven't been through a troublesome time. You know,
yeah,
you
seem it like needs you're to fine. Be. yeah, I agree with you. It kind of takes that realistic feeling away from it.
You
kind
of a bit of dust disconnect and just throw it at them. You know, yeah, make it look a bit tough.
Did you see how much it cost to make Squid Game?
It's got to be a lot, because they had to have a lot of cast. First thing, big scene. Second thing, third thing, really good filming and cinematography.
And by the way, you would think that most of it was in front of a green screen, but a very small amount was on a green screen.
If I was them, I would have made the scenes fully, because you have 5 main
they
scenes.
They almost did.
Really?
Those sets you're seeing, especially that multicolored one with all those stairs that they always walk on.
Yeah, I can.
That's all real. The glass one.
Can't be real.
Listen, my hands are sweating when I think of that glass scene. How hectic is that glass scene, eh?
No.
Like, would you be able, if you were on that thing, would you be able to tell the difference between the 2 types of glass, or would you also?
No, I'll know the difference, because I'll fall through. That's
but it's too late. Then it's gone.
Yeah,
then you're gone.
Exactly.
Because that one guy, I remember in Squid Game, he was able to see the difference, and then they switched the bloody lights off, and he couldn't see anymore. It must be horrible jumping, and you don't know what if it's a proper glass or normal glass. And
no.
You just know when you're falling, and then it's too late. Hey, that's hectic, that show, eh?
No, it is. It is.
Like, but anyway, it cost $2.4 million per episode.
Wow.
So for the entire series, $21.4 million, and it looks like there is a season 2 on the way. It hasn't been confirmed yet.
So I know that the latest Avengers, I think, was $180 million budget, but they pulled in something like $2.4 billion revenue from it.
Yes, see.
So I mean, that budget that you specified isn't necessarily tremendous, but if you look at something like Avengers, a big movie, big cinematics, big special effects, big CGI, something like a series pulling the same kind of budget out is difficult, and it's a big investment, and it becomes quite clear why it took so long to do it. But speaking of big budgets, do you know that South Africa is seeking 400 billion rand of finance from a shift to coal? And this is something that we've discussed a lot, and my gran, who's listening now, actually asked me a very interesting question the other day. She said, you know, do you think electric vehicles stand a chance to replace traditional fuel engines or combustion engines in the near future? And my response was, well, at the current rate at which we're replacing a combustion engine vehicle with an electric engine vehicle, considering that even combustion engine vehicles are still being produced, it's not like every new vehicle is an electric vehicle, the rate at which we're replacing combustion with electric isn't fast enough to accomplish that in the next 50 years. That's the first thing. Even if we were to speed it up and we do end up replacing a significant amount of combustion engines with electric engines, the second problem is, how do we derive the electricity to power the vehicle? If we're burning coal to power the vehicle, it's still a pollutant agent. It's still influencing carbon emissions. It's still influencing climate change. And that's not necessarily the problem solved. The real problem is how we derive electricity that isn't based on coal burning or non-renewable resource, you know, burning and things like that. So South Africa is seeking cheap finance for more than 400 billion rand of electricity infrastructure as part of its plans to move away from heavily polluting coal. Eskom, as we've spoken before, is one of the largest polluters in the world.
In the world, yeah.
In the world.
Yeah. You
know? That's
above China.
And South Africa's small. Look at the size of USA. Look at the size of Russia.
Exactly.
You know, look at the size of Asian regions, European regions.
Oh my gosh.
And South Africa is one of the biggest polluters in the world. It's crazy. So through a funding facility backed by rich nations and development finance institutions, South Africa hopes to build more than 180 billion rand of cleaner power generation, 120 billion rand of emission equipment, as well as substations, transformers, and distribution technology. More than 80% of the country's electricity is currently generated by burning coal, making it the world's 12th biggest carbon emitter. But last month, the government adopted a more ambitious emissions reduction target ahead of the United Nations COP26 climate summit in November. So obviously they're feeling the pressure. You don't want to go to a climate summit and you're fitting in the top 12 biggest polluters. South Africa's message: we are prepared to make a substantial carbon reduction, but this must be financed by developed countries on concessional terms, quote unquote, meaning more debt, you know, more debt.
Did you see where they're getting those batteries from?
No.
Our friend Elon.
Really?
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
Tesla
making big moves.
They're buying 1,000 Tesla megapacks.
Wow. I hope it's worth it. But here's the big...
It's very neat.
Wow.
Looks nice.
Looks nice on
the eye.
Looks like a small little cityscape.
Yeah.
But here's the big thing, right? So the presentation made clear that the amount only accounted for the cost of building more than 7 gigawatts of new generation. That is 7,000 megawatts.
Sure.
We spoke about it before and we'll say it again. South Africa generates about 32,000 megawatts of electricity.
Sure.
Of which currently 700 megawatts are renewable energy. And of that, we're now going to try and produce another 7,000 megawatts of electricity from green. So we'll have a total of 7,700 megawatts of electricity generation of the 32,000 megawatts of electricity generation. Granted that we can sustain that and we don't have to add, you know, you don't have to sustain the 32,000 megawatts of coal generation and just add 7,000 megawatts of renewable energy generation. We actually have to replace those substations, replace that generation with the electrical or at least the solar generation. But it goes to show 400 billion rand will give you 7,000 megawatts of renewable energy generation. It's, you know, it's not even one fourth of the required amount in order to replace all coal generating units, and we're financing that through other countries and creating relationships and further debt. So I commend them for finally taking that action, because you can only go one step at a time, but it just goes to show how far away we are and how much money we need at the current cost to generate electricity to actually accomplish that, replacing all coal generation with renewable energy generation. Very interesting, right?
You're very, very interesting. But I must say, these mega packs from Tesla is looking very, very nice. It's all very easy on the eye. Look here. It looks a very futuristic look.
Yes.
It's a neat look.
It looks
and that's
like
what you want.
A bunch of lockers kind of thing, but very,
you're right,
very big,
absolutely.
Ones.
Describing it to our listeners, it looks like, yeah, lockers.
A suite of really big one-room lockers all stacked next to each other.
Because I saw the power grid report recently for yesterday, I think, and it's not looking good. I think we're imminent for the L word again. But we can't say
don't
the L
say
word.
It.
No, we can't, because people are blaming us.
No. There's no load shedding coming.
They say whenever you talk
least.
About it, then it comes. So please shut up.
No, there's no load shedding. You didn't hear it from us.
No. No, we didn't say the L word. Your listener, quite a few interesting things. Just quickly, Takealot had some downtime this week as well.
Facebook?
Facebook was down. I think goodthingsguy.com was also down. Everybody's just going down.
What is goodthingsguy.com?
It's that feel-good website, South African website, with only positive stories.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah.
More you know.
Yeah.
Well, you know.
I'm teaching you, Kane. I'm teaching you. And also people having endless problems with the new DStv streaming app after the app updates. And I can vouch for it. It's total shambles. It freezes. It goes black. You can't watch stuff. It's just horrible. Why release an app when it's not right? Can you just tell me why?
You know, that's the thing is, if you look at it from a workload perspective, let's say you're a DStv, you've developed a new update for your streaming service, you tell everyone in your company, all 500 strong technicians, test it out. So all 500 technicians test it out at once, everything seems fine. Then you release it to the public and 7 million people all try use it at the same time. There's the issues.
Wow, Kane.
Scalability.
Perspective. Thank you for that. That kind of makes sense. Yeah, and also it's all trial and error, I suppose. So the people have to try stuff out that you not necessarily
But it's inexcusable. That's why you hire the professionals.
Yeah, so and use different devices, and maybe it's just worse on some of the devices. All I know is it needs to be fixed as soon as possible.
But the thing is, pressure rushes companies for stuff like this.
Yeah.
And that pressure comes from the community. The
pressure comes
from the subscribers.
Wow, okay.
So...
very nice angle there.
The more the subscribers want better stuff and the more the competitors are trying to steal your existing subscribers, the more pressure you're under to develop an update to make them happy. But the thing is, those subscribers are going to be unhappy no matter what. Because you can speak and you can speak and you can speak, but what the consumers are actually looking for is action. They're looking for results. They're looking for updates. So to try and make subscribers happy by rushing development timelines or chasing tail of development timelines often leads you to release something that could blow up in your face. You're not going to make subscribers happy if you release something and it's terrible. So rather release it at a pace which you're confident in, and the subscribers will be happy no matter what. At least then they're going to lose more subscribers from this outage and this downtime and this poor streaming quality than they would have waiting an extra 6 months to release the update if necessary.
It's a tricky thing. It's nice to get a bit of insight on the other side of it, you know, a bit of perspective, which really helps a lot. Did you hear something outside your bathroom last night? Did you hear something in the bushes last night? Think about it.
Did you listen in while I was practicing my raps?
Yep. While you were practicing your raps in the shower last night, I came to your house. I was in the bushes for 5 minutes. You need to trim those bushes, okay? I got lost in there. And the thorns. Oh my word. Look at all the marks. And then I recorded you in the shower.
You're lucky my guard pet didn't come out and my guard cat, you know. You don't want to mess with them.
Yeah, no, but listen, I literally recorded you at the window.
Okay, let's hear what you got.
This is what I got.
Yeah, I'm nervous now.
The start of the water, the card wasn't in the heart of the cuz in the water. Nothing was bothered. We busted and touching the heart of the people that dust in the heart as we charted. Like I ain't never got signed.
Get the chair to a seat. You can literally hear the shower.
Yeah. You're using a lot of water. You should cut down. The swearing was quite active.
Yeah, I know. I'm glad you didn't catch those.
It's coming.
Like I ain't drip. Like I ain't froze. Like I ain't made a quarter mil for a show. Like I ain't big. Like I ain't huge. Like.
Is that the swearing out of there? Like
a tour with the J-Rock, with the homie K-Dot. Like I never. Like I didn't step in the session with seven.
So yes, so I got home very late last night because of that, but it was quite a show. Thank you.
So I guess we'll have to just do a live recording in studio one of these days.
Yeah, we can do a proper one. But nice, that was your practicing.
It's my debut.
How do you do that? I want to ask you. How do you breathe when you have to talk that much?
Actually, that's a very good question, and I did struggle with it in the beginning, actually. You wouldn't think about it, but it actually comes down
to your nose.
Well, the breathing actually fits with the rhythm.
So there is breathing, you just can't hear it.
Yeah, traditionally when you're talking, you take a full breath. You know, when you're done with your air, you take a full breath. But in rapping, you're actually taking compartmentalized breaths. You're taking small breaths at the right moments to sustain what you're saying. Even in singing, I think it's the same, you know.
Yeah.
It's the perfect combination of the gap that you have available in the interlude and the amount of air that you take in. But speaking about air and water and showering, we're taking a look at something that's quite interesting. We're mining the moon. Will mining the moon's water require massive infrastructure? And should we? That's the ultimate question. So we live in a world in which momentous decisions are made by people often without forethought. But some things are predictable, including that if you continually consume a finite resource without recycling, it will eventually run out. Yet, as we set our sights on embarking back to the moon, we'll be bringing with us all our bad habits, including the urge for unrestrained consumption. Since the 1994 discovery of water ice on the moon by the Clementine spacecraft, excitement has reigned as the prospect of a return to the moon. This followed 2 decades after the end of Apollo and was symptomatic of an underlying lack of incentive to return. So why a return to the moon? How much can we get out of it? What's the financial incentive? So a United States Navy video on the 25th anniversary of NASA's Clementine mission, that water changed everything. The water ice deposits are located at the poles of the moon, hidden in the depths of the craters that are forever devoid of sunlight. So at the poles of the moon, you have craters, and in those craters is water, and that water cannot evaporate unless struck by sunlight. So there's ice in the craters at the poles of the moon. Due to the International Space Station, we have developed advanced techniques that will allow us to recycle water and oxygen with high efficiency. This makes the value of supplying local water for human consumption more tenuous. But if the human population on the moon grows, so will the demand. So what do we do with the water on the moon? There are 2 commonly proposed answers, which is any energy storage using fuel cells and fuel and oxidizers for propulsion. The first is easily dispensed with fuel cells, recycle their hydrogen and oxygen through electrolysis when they are recharged with very little leakage. So the thing is, if we go to the moon and we want to be harvesting the water from the moon, it's not going to be an infinite supply. There's no ecosystem on the moon. The more we mine, the less there is. So the ultimate question is, what do you think? Would it be adventitious to mine water on the moon and use it to sustain the population on the moon? Or do we just bring Spa 5 liters up with us?
Yeah, I think we can just take the Spa. Kate, you saw me in the shop yesterday with the Spa 5 liters, by the way. Oh, my word, that's hilarious. Listen, how on earth, I can't get my head around it. How on earth can you get somebody in South Africa who uses 135 terabytes a month? He was the biggest data hog in the country for the past month.
I don't know how it's possible.
So what on earth are you streaming or downloading? That's 135 terabytes.
I mean, a good quality movie is about 2 gigs. I'd say 1.8 to 2.4 gigs. There's 1,000 gigs in a terabyte, and he's downloading 135 terabytes every single month.
Sure.
I don't know what he's doing. What could he possibly be doing? What uses that sheer amount? You know what? He has a game. He uploads something, and then he downloads, and he sees how many times he can do it in a day, and he's just gotten really good at it.
Yeah, because, I mean, even Pornhub or something, the entire library of Pornhub wouldn't be that size.
No, I don't even think there's databases that big. I mean, only thing that contends with something like that is if you downloaded, 10% of all the videos on YouTube, you'd probably come close to 135 terabytes, So it really is a good question, and I mean, do you know what he did to do that?
No.
Nothing.
No, but the ISP actually, I think when somebody downloads that amount of data, the ISP has to actually talk to him about it, because that was ridiculous.
Well, I would definitely get a bit of a scrook if my ISP.
Or investigate.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing. Normally, ISPs, especially here in South Africa, if you take out an uncapped subscription, right? So you take, I'll have uncapped, please. They usually limit you to about 100 gigs at your full speed, and then, half your speed for the next 50 gigs.
So-called throttling, yeah.
And then 25% of your speed for the next 25 gigs and so on and so forth until eventually you're downloading at 1 kilobyte a second. But this ISP obviously didn't do that. He somehow had access to his full speed for the entire month. So
yeah.
I think the problem should, the responsibility is actually on the ISP to further disclose what is in their service. Because
probably
if it is
seen.
Truly uncapped, you're allowed to use whatever you want. It's uncapped.
Can they see what he accessed?
I don't know how possible it is. First of all, it's a privacy thing.
Mm.
So for someone to access what you browsed online, you're not a company investigating. It's a single individual investigating it. So it comes into question, what are your privacy rights, first and foremost? And secondly, I think that kind of stuff requires government-issued warrants and things like that. So if there was suspicion of malicious activity or terrorist intent, then by all means it'll be checked out. But also the thing is, you get downloading, which can contribute to 135 terabytes, but you also get uploading. And if he's sharing a lot of files over a very good internet connection, he could be uploading files at the full speed of his internet every minute of every day for a whole month.
Yeah.
And that could easily contribute to 135 terabytes if you're sharing 5,000 files across your whole entire computer every day, all day. So he might be a file sharer or file aggregator, some sort of, if you go onto a torrent site, you can see seeders. He might just be one of the biggest seeders the universe has ever known.
Yeah, and we thank the people for those seeders, because if we don't have those seeders, we can't download this stuff. And then you usually get this really good seeder on there, like, thank you, man. Thanks for leaving your computer on and your brilliant internet connection. Now I can illegal download whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And people really do it. But yeah. I mean, even from a, you know, that kind of logic, the seeder, leecher, sharing, file sharing, contributed to Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, because it's kind of the inverted version of that. Instead of you downloading one file from 100 different computers on Bitcoin, you're verifying one ledger or one file against many other computers. So to put it in perspective, if you had a file on your computer that was like a text document with 1,000 lines of text on it, instead of uploading that text file to different people, you getting each line of text from many different computers when you're downloading it, for crypto, you're checking every line that to make sure that it's the same across every computer. So that's kind of the backwards technology kind of aspect of crypto in comparison to something like seeding and torrenting. So he could be doing something crypto related, he could be doing something torrent related, he could be doing a variety of things. But even the biggest games, I think, you know, it's most games maximum is like 200 gigs. But there was also that digital universe. Remember I told you someone successfully created a digital simulation of the universe, very, very accurate to every single particle. And I think it was like 150 terabytes or 100 terabytes worth of storage required in order to download that simulated universe. So he could have just downloaded that, you know.
Yeah.
So it's hard to know. It's hard.
Jeez, but that router must have been piping hot.
Screaming. That thing was smoking.
Yeah, definitely. Shame, man.
When you unplugged that router, you could hear it whining down. You know, like it had to take a breath. Like after a long run, when you finished the pants a bit, you could hear it breathing heavily.
Shame. But listen, you just mentioned Bitcoin. It was a good week for Bitcoin, eh?
Absolutely.
See, they rallied to a record high after a strong debut by the US exchange traded fund. The largest cryptocurrency jumped as much as 3.1% to $66,084, which is really good.
Yeah. Considering the first time I got into crypto or started considering purchasing Bitcoin, it was below $1,000. I mean, where else have you seen 66x return on investment? When you look at traditional stocks and things like that, I think from 2015 to 2020, the biggest increase on a single stock or a single investment in the stocks was 59%. So in 5-year period, 59% is the most you could have made from a single investment at a flat amount. You know, you're not leveraging, you're not doing anything like that. And here comes crypto over a 5-year period shooting up 66 times more. You know, that's insane. That's not 59%, that's 6,600%.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, I'm sure it's 66,000% X, which is crazy. That's a lot of return on investment for early crypto investors. But it's not over now, and it's not going to be over for a while. And people even said, I saw another article, digital currency investors of today will be the biggest stakeholders in that metaverse that we were talking about with Facebook. You're going to be the future of the digital currency environment. I mean, you're either going to be experienced in it or you're going to be wealthy in it, you know, especially if it continues with its current growth. You know, always do your own research and things like that. This is not financial advice, but based on what we see over the last 5 years, it is really a strong uptrend and a good adoption rate. You know, people, there's use cases, there's utilities for it, and it's not governed by any single individual. So there's a lot of potential in it, and we can see it now with Bitcoin breaking its new all-time high. We don't know how long it's going to be there. It might be a great time to buy now. It might be a terrible time to buy now, because with every up comes a down. But then there's your perfect time. So if you haven't already, just take a look at it, you know, learn a little bit about it. It definitely hasn't died in the last 10 years, so it might be worth learning. Don't invest, but learn. You know, find out what it is, why it works, how it works, why people enjoy it, you know. Follow some people who talk about it all the time. It doesn't just start and stop with Bitcoin. There's many other cryptocurrencies out there. There's many other initiatives out there which utilize blockchain technology which aren't even crypto related. And then there's even more utility out there for digital content creators from an NFT perspective. You know, sole proprietary ownership of a digital asset has never been something that we've seen before, you know, and now we have it. So definitely good to see Bitcoin breaking a new all-time high.
Just a few shorts for this week as well. Bank Zero is finally opening in 2022. They opened fully, but they unveiled their pricing for 2022. That's the new Bank Zero. And then PayPal is interested in buying Pinterest. What an interesting combination, PayPal and Pinterest.
Must be their way to get into the social media world.
Ah.
Pinterest is kind of like under the radar. I'm sure you don't consider buying something unless you have a greater plan in mind.
Yeah. And I was wondering.
As someone like PayPal, if you look at something like WeChat with their payment network infrastructure and something like WhatsApp with their payment network infrastructure, if you're developing a social media content sharing platform and people can make payments within it, it makes sense to buy something like Pinterest. You know, you have some infrastructure there already from your side of the PayPal side. Could be interesting.
Yeah, and then Spotify launched Spotify Premium for students here in South Africa and also 19 other countries. So if you can pretend you're a student, Kane, you can get Spotify Premium for only R29.99 per month now.
Wow.
That's a nice bargain to get rid of those ads.
Get rid of Gwendolyn.
It's Gwendolyn, yeah. How do we pretend that we are students? That's the question.
Yeah.
And then also Google released their new phone this week. It's got quite an interesting design. Yeah.
It's
very,
like?
Very blocky, but it looks nice.
It looks like the old Nokia phone.
Yes, yes.
But a bit thinner.
And then also, you know, this is very concerning. There's a new study that came out this week. The South African Local Government Association, SALGA, found, this is shocking, that only 62% of councillors, or they found that 62% of councillors did not have the needed computer skills to actually work there in the municipal area.
That's crazy. I mean, you're talking about the cardiovascular system of the government.
62% of South African municipal councillors struggle to use a computer. And then we wonder why they always say the system is offline.
Now we
know why. Because you don't know how to put it online.
No, I mean, if you think about it as well, I mean, you go somewhere like, you know, to register your license sometimes or go get your ID, and there's just this like disconnect between the person you're speaking to and how they're, you know, actually producing activity on the computer. I feel like I don't think you need a lot of skill to do it, but I definitely think skill's a factor in efficiency, and we have a very inefficient system. We absolutely do. It takes way too long to go and even book your new ID. You know, I've never walked in there, walked out, got my new ID same day. And that kind of system awareness and things like that is very important. I mean, imagine you go and register your car and they register the wrong number, you know, or something like that.
Quite possible.
Could happen.
They arrest you for stolen cars. Imagine.
No, I hope that's never happened, but definitely needs to be addressed. And I think that's just a case of not doing proper due diligence in the hiring process. Your human resources team and that sort of thing is lacking, significantly lacking, because you're filling spots and slots, but those people in those positions have responsibilities, and if you're slacking on that, you disrupt an entire chain of command, and it's very stressful for them as well. It's hard to do a job you don't know how to do properly, and it's hard to ask questions about a job you don't know how to do when you're doing the job and you feel like your job might be at risk. So I'm sure the percentage might even be worse, it might be better, I don't know, but definitely needs to be addressed.
Absolutely. And just lastly, have you since considered upgrading to Windows 11?
No, not at the moment.
And not accepting WhatsApp's? You still haven't accepted WhatsApp's
no,
thing?
No.
Is it still asking you for it?
Every day.
Oh my word.
Every day. And I don't even know, because my friends have obviously accepted it and I haven't, and you've accepted it and I haven't, and yes. I see no difference at all.
So why do it then?
Exactly, why do it?
Yeah.
It also begs the question, like a friend of mine, I don't know if he's listening right now, but he showed me a thing on Facebook where you can actually go check your off Facebook activity. It's called off Facebook activity. It's in your settings and you can see all the data Facebook records for your off app activity.
You told me in the shop with yes. my 5-liter bottle of water.
And the really interesting thing for me is when I reviewed my own in off app activity, which Facebook provides to you, I saw, okay, here's a few apps that I have on my phone. Here's some websites that I visited on my browser on my phone. But more importantly, there were websites that I visited on my computer.
Yeah, it's all synced, man.
Which I've never visited on my phone before. And I thought, wow, my app on my phone has recorded activity information yep. for things that I did. I wouldn't even have been logged into Facebook. They would have synced data from my cache and my browser history upon returning back to Facebook. They reviewed that information and cataloged it and created, you know, indexes for what my activity is. And I thought it was crazy. I thought it was absolutely crazy because, you know, I was investigating a new campaign management tool and I saw that campaign management tool linked up in my Facebook, and I wouldn't be surprised if I received ads for competitor
yep.
campaign management tools.
Yep.
And that's how Facebook makes money, but it's very invasive and it's unpermissioned. You have to go turn it off. You don't turn it on. There's a big difference between the
yeah,
two.
Yeah, you're right. It comes by default, it's on.
Yes.
You need to go and turn it off.
Yes.
But otherwise, like your average person, you wouldn't know about it. They exactly. listen to you.
It's like me coming into your house and taking your milk and leaving. And
you can actually take it, it's
way
finished.
And the only way you can get it back is to come and ask me.
Can I please get it back?
You see what I mean?
But listen, that's very intrusive. I don't like it. It's almost like Santa Claus. They see you when you're sleeping and they know when you're awake. So yeah. be good for goodness
and
sake.
And it's not like there's a single person behind Facebook who's like, ha ha ha, I now have yeah. Kane's browser activity and app activity. Hee hee, I'm so rich. But Facebook has indexed it. You will receive ads and notifications and posts based on what this activity is that you do. And I think it's very clever, but it's also very concerning because the accuracy of it is getting better and better and better. I think some people really prefer to lead a private life where they feel exactly. like their life is their life and nobody can peer into their life. And it's crazy. I mean, if you think about it from another point of view, if someone else gets access to your phone, goes to your Facebook, goes to your off-air Facebook activity, they have a very good idea of what you do in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Very good idea. Very quick idea. You know,
yeah.
quick synopsis of you.
They know you better than you know yourself.
Yeah. As a spy, they've done the work for you. You just got to get their phone sure. and go there. So, yeah, it is concerning. And this is obviously, we see it now, like things like that. Facebook now, oh, we got to change our name. We got to do this. We got to do that. They're under the microscope at the moment for these kind of behavioral activities and things like that. I never got a message on my Facebook or a notification on my Facebook to say, hey, we record your off activity. To turn it off, go here.
Mm.
I had to be shown by a friend who, and it's deep in the settings. It's like the settings menu, then it's another sub menu and another sub menu, and then there you are, you know.
We need to let our listeners know how to do that. Maybe I'll get it from you and then you let me know, and then
yeah.
we can publish it in an article so they can switch it off.
Definitely. Let's do it for next week. Yeah. I think that's a
so
good
they can
idea.
Stop listening to us and whatever. Yeah, they definitely listen to you. I mean, talk about something and then 5 minutes later the ad is there.
Yeah.
It's a fact. We've tested it many times.
Yeah. And it's a very confusing thing because some people would say, well, I don't really care if no one who has eyes sees the stuff that I do. But it's just the whole logic of it. You know, if Facebook systems
man.
Are compromised, or, you know, you're more susceptible. If you're a guy who's looking at computer games every single day, every single day, every single day, they see, okay, this guy loves car racing games. You're likely to lose money at the next car game advertised to you. You're going to go and buy it. And if you had never been bared witness to that ad and you don't have very strong, you know, financial discipline, you're going to go and buy that game because you see this ad that is specifically tailored to interest you. I think it's crazy. You could be left wing or right wing about it.
Mm.
But it's all about preference. And I think that's why Facebook shouldn't be doing this without your permission. You know,
exactly.
Charge me a subscription fee. Make me pay 10 rand a month to use Facebook without you tracking me. You know, but don't make it this enforced thing, because I'm not joining Facebook because that's where Facebook is. I'm joining Facebook because that's where my friends are.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's and, I'm
and,
not there
and the celebrities
right
you follow, yeah.
Exactly.
Kane, thanks, man. That was great. Another great edition and another great session. You should probably run now because I believe there's already bigger rain on the way.
I'm going to cart all the way sign. Home.
So, yes, next week, same time, same place. Thanks, Kane.
Thanks so much, Ian. It was really another great week on the Tech Show. Shout out to all the people listening today. I know I have a few of my friends listening in today, and it's really good to have them, you know, they're supporting me every day, so I really appreciate it. And I also have my gran, I know he's definitely listening in at the moment. So to all our listeners who support us, thank you so much, and I'll see you next week.
Hello, everyone, and bye.
Hello, everyone.
We got it. Cheers, Kate, and thank you. That's it for Tech Plus for another week.
TCS Wi-Fi keeps eRadio connected. Fast, flexible, and reliable. Visit tcswifi.co.za. TCS Wi-Fi. It's internet, only better. This podcast was brought to you by eRadio. For more podcasts, check out our website on eradiosa.com or through the eRadio SA app from the Google Play Store.